Evening, Sarasota. Thanks for tuning in to Local Matters, where local folks drop by to talk about local things that matter here on WSLR 96.5 LPFM, Sarasota's listener-supported community station. This is your host, Gary Olson, filling in for Joe Hendricks, who's on his honeymoon. And I'm joined in the WSLR studio by Local Matters co-host Steve Norris. Hello, Steve.
It is a pleasure to be here. And if you're calling in, just wait a minute. We will be taking some calls later, but just not right at this moment. And we want to thank Bungalow Builders, right, for sponsoring this show.
Yes, indeed. This show is sponsored by Bungalow Builders, builders of handcrafted sustainable homes, building eco-friendly homes for eco-friendly people. See more of their green bungalow designs at www.bungalowbuildersllc.com. And Steve, I think there's a little disclaimer you'd like to read, correct?
Indeed, I just want to let you know that these views are not those of WSLR, its board members, its volunteers, its employees, or anyone else, just those of the guests and co-hosts and the people in the studio. Take what you like and leave the rest, Gary, and I want to thank you for filling in for Joe while he's somewhat indisposed today, and everybody, of course, wishes Joe and Amy the best.
Right, and we also have another co-host tonight, correct?
Indeed. So sitting to my left is Andy Howe. Hello, Andy.
Hi. Hi, everybody. This is the first time I've ever been on the radio.
Yes. And Andy is a librarian, and she's joining us today. Also happens to be my cousin. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we have a special guest this evening, and that's Kathy Silverberg. Kathy is the former publisher of the Sarasota Herald Tribune's Southern Editions. Kathy?
Yes, well, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here tonight.
Great. Steve, I'm going to turn it over to you for late-breaking news.
Yes, and I want to share with you some late-breaking news which has come out over the wires about oil and such that's coming out. Also, there's also some news about the media that Rachel Maddow has been calling out Fox News for stoking racial fears among whites with the news that was reported about Shirley Sherrod. Also, credit card companies are raising fees on good customers to recoup their lost profits. And also, you're going to hear more about toxic chemicals and beauty and household products. Amy Goodman has been also been reporting on that. And Washington lobbyists are cashing in on big BP oil spill. Who's the big beneficiary here? Washington lobbyists are cashing in. Late breaking news, Gary.
Okay, thanks, Steve. And we're going to talk a little bit about the oil situation with Kathy here in just a moment. But we'd like to get a little background, Kathy. You were with the Herald Tribune Southern Editions. You were publisher. But maybe give us a little biographical information on yourself so we know who you are, what you've done in the past, and how you got to be in the position you are now, which is writing editorials for the Herald Tribune.
Sure. Well, newspapers have been the news, I should say, really has been something that's been a passion of mine, really, for as long as I can remember. And I had the great fortune of being involved in community newspapers for most of my career. Most of those newspapers were a part of the New York Times newspaper group, mm-hmm. which is how I got to Sarasota. I came here, as you say, as the publisher of our editions to the South. At that time, we had editions in Charlotte County, as well as Northport and Inglewood, and those were that was my area of responsibility. Certainly, there have been some changes in the newspaper business, as sort of we alluded to, but lots of changes. And some of those duties have shifted around and are not the same as they were when I came. But I did, all the time I was here, I wrote a column. When I first came, it was more sort of a community news, sort of what's happening in our area sort of column. But when I retired from full-time employment, the management of the Herald Tribune graciously asked me if I would continue to write a weekly column, which I have done, and it appears on the editorial page. The column I write now is more, it's a current issues-driven column, but I guess I try to I really try to look for issues that really matter in people's lives. There's so much information and so much that happens in our world that really doesn't have an effect on our daily lives. But so the things I look for to write about are the things that matter to us, and with a hope that something I might say would trigger further discussion, further investigation by readers, and maybe offer them a new way of looking at something.
When did you retire?
I retired a year and a half ago.
Okay.
From full-time employment.
And you've been writing the articles ever since.
And right? I have, yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. Did the Southern editions get consolidated? Or?
They did to some. We used to have separate editions in those three areas. Now we have an edition that is targeted mostly to Southern Sarasota County and to some extent Charlotte County.
I think a question everybody would like to have answered is your opinion on the state of the print media in Florida, in the region, in Sarasota. Now, we've seen a great many cutbacks at the Herald Tribune, for example.
Right.
I know there have been cutbacks at the Pelican Press and other local papers. What do you see from an overall view? It's not just the economy, but there are changes going on in media, correct?
Absolutely. And I think it's going to take a while for all of this to shake out, because what I think the good part is that there are so many sources of information now for people, and it's so accessible. And that's the good side. The downside, or the part that we really need to work on, I think, as a society, is to try to figure out what are credible sources and what aren't. And that that makes, with the explosion of the internet and all the other social media, it's become very difficult for people to sort through what's really credible. And the other thing is, I think it's pressed some of the more traditional media into a more reactionary mode that they, you know, I think sometimes they feel like they have to come out with something right away rather than spending the time to really investigate, whatever the issue is. I can say that although I have not been a regular member of the Herald Tribune staff for a while, my perception of what they do and my knowledge of what they did when I was there, they have tried to focus resources that have been diminishing, no question,
mm-hmm.
but tried to focus their resources on more in-depth, the things that you don't get in the more immediate.
And they have done some wonderful reporting. Michael Braga's, there were three reporters actually on the flipping scandal,
right.
And also Paige St. John, and we had Paige in on another program here a couple months ago,
right.
Going into the property crisis, the insurance situation,
yes.
and all of that. Really marvelous investigative reporting, and I'm very proud of our local newspaper for getting into those things under the current economic circumstances.
Well, I think that's a choice that the management has made. That's where, I think some people, there might not be as much immediate where the latest car wreck or the latest, or even sometimes where the community activities might, sometimes that's more difficult for them to cover all of those things. But I think they've decided that the resources, that they can best use their resources in this more in-depth investigative. And there are really so many other ways for the other bits of news to find their way into the mainstream.
You kind of hit on the credibility issue, and we had this Shirley Sherrod thing come up, and
yes.
the blogging and all of the people that are out there sending information around, and there are folks who are actually tuning in on this stuff and believing all of this information that's out there, and it's kind of frightening, really. Where does all of this end?
That is a difficult issue. I was talking to a friend at lunch today about that very thing. I think people are going to have to realize that just because it comes across their computer screen, it's true. I think we've got to become a little more, now how you go about that is a whole different issue, but to become a little more discerning and to try to maybe take at least one more step. So where did this information come from? What's the whole, in this Shirley Sherrod issue, what's the whole clip? Let me listen to, which is the wonderful thing about the internet, and people could have listened to the entire presentation.
Steve, I know you gather a lot of information over the internet for your other program that you do on WSLR. Maybe you got some comments.
Well, yeah, just to continue with what was said here by Kathy. So what Rachel Maddow said is that this has gone beyond just mistakes in the media or information that's not correct. There is a message, a politically dedicated and specifically engineered message. And if you've never heard it, I'm going to tell you what it is right now. For the Shirley Sherrod, what's going on here is that they want you, the message is not directed towards blacks. This is directed towards whites. Be afraid, white people. There is a threat to take you over. The black people are coming for you, and you better band together, not surrender, to fight back. And that Fox News was operating almost as a political group by advocating the Van Jones Acorn New Black Panther Party and Shirley Sherrod stories that are linked together for a message aimed at white people for specific political purposes.
A lot of this is very, very frightening.
Well, you know, it's a little bit interesting as I think back into the history of American journalism. If you really go back to the beginnings of the earliest newspapers in this country, they were very much political voices.
Mm-hmm.
They were meant to convince people of one side or another. The beauty of it was that there were a variety, and people would read different ones, and to get different opinions. And then, of course, the time came when particularly newspapers separated that. They made an effort to separate, a concerted effort to separate what was the facts, if you will, and what was the opinion. But now it seems to me that is very much being blurred.
One more comment if I have. Now we see something with BP in the media that we've really, I'm not sure, seen in such a scale, and that is BP better at controlling the leaks in the media than controlling the leaks in the Gulf. And we see new tactics where the BP personnel are joined hands with the local authorities to prohibit media from having access to public lands. Comments?
I don't know. I don't have it. If I commented anything specific there, I would be saying that because I don't have any information that's true. It very well may be. You know,
this was reported in AP. Resources. I'm just citing resources there.
I think that there are certainly there's a huge business that's whole job is to spin, if you will, whatever the message of a corporation or a, or any interest group, and certainly that goes on. Being prohibited from public lands is another issue, I would say. I'm sure there are some safety issues, but I don't know. I'm not that familiar with that particular issue.
As an overview, how do you feel about the media coverage of the whole BP fiasco?
I think the media coverage has been fairly good. I get most of my information from mainstream media, so mm-hmm. That's what I'm. For the most part, I think it has been good. I lived for 35 years in Louisiana, so I'm pretty familiar with with what is a rather unusual association between those who depend on the land and the sea for their living, and those who are in the oil business. It's really it's kind of been a symbiotic relationship, because there is certainly, and there have been things that the oil industry has done knowingly and unknowingly sometimes that have been harmful to the environment, but there have been also the best fishing is around the oil rigs. The oil rigs actually are often used after they've are gone out of service. They sink them into the Gulf, and they become artificial reefs where the fish and will breed, and that becomes a wonderful place for fishing. So it's been an interesting. Plus, the other thing that makes it sort of interesting is that the same people who fish also work in the oil industry, because mm-hmm. oftentimes, you know, particularly the offshore workers, they work 2 weeks on the rigs and 2 weeks at home. When they're home, they're fishing and they're making money. So it's it's been, culturally, it's a very interesting sort of mix.
Well, if Citizens Act Gulf disaster can catalyze wiser energy policy.
Right.
That's one of the articles you wrote
recently.
Right,
it is.
Can you kind of summarize your feelings that were reflected in that article?
Exactly. And yes. Did you specifically, did you?
Well, how are those linked together?
Well, I think what everyone is realizing is that there has got to be ways for the, in the short term, drilling for oil in the Gulf is probably something that's going to have to go on. If this country is to continue to operate as we have, the demand for energy needs that fuel. However, the safety factors need to be considered much more strongly.
Are you an advocate then for drilling in the Gulf?
I would say I'm not an advocate for drilling. If you're asking me in the coastal waters of Florida, no. But I think what's going on now is, I think in the short term, we're going to have to continue to do that.
Can I just make one comment? Go ahead,
but
Steve.
You said something that our oil or energy is dependent on oil drilling, and that is not necessarily supported by information that I've seen. I guess I'll just say I question that statement, whether offshore drilling, the experts that I took said it would have absolutely no effect whatsoever on any of our LNG policies or anything, and that, you know, in one respect, the risks so far outweigh the benefits.
I think that jury may still be out. The real answer to me is renewable energy. That we've got to. That's where the future is. But in the short term, we're not going to have renewable energy that's going to supply the energy needs of this country in the short term.
I've even read that a lot of the oil that has been drilled in the Gulf so far is not coming to the United States anyway. It's being auctioned off overseas. And that means the whole idea of the necessity of having drilling in the Gulf for our benefit is not really true.
Well,
There is only one rig which is specifically mandated to get oil to the United States. All the others go into a pool when you get
right?
oil. It's in a pool, an international pool.
I can't speak to that.
To put you on the spot like that. I'd like to tell our audience they are listening to WSLR LPFM 96.5 in Sarasota. The program is Local Matters, and I'm Gary Olson, along with co-host Steve Norris, and we have as our guest Kathy Silverberg, former publisher of the Sarasota Herald Tribune's Southern Editions. Kathy, so nice to have you here, and we'd like to talk a little bit further in just a moment. But I have a couple of messages to read. The League of Women Voters of Sarasota County will present a forum with candidates for Sarasota County School Board on Thursday, July 29th. That's a week from today, from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Selby Library, 1331 First Street in downtown Sarasota. I'd like you to note that the early voting for the primary begins August 9th. And for this seminar, the public is invited to attend the debate and to submit questions at the beginning of the forum. And for more information, you can call telephone number 349-0908, and I'll read that again, 349-0908, or you can email the following email address, patt52@comcast.net. And one more word for you here. Monday, July 26th, also coming up very soon, will be the last day to register to vote in the August 24th primary. New voter registrations and party changes must be postmarked by July 26th or delivered in person to any supervisor of elections office not later than 5 p.m. that day. For more information, call the supervisor of elections at 861-8600. Or you may write to the Supervisor of Elections, Post Office Box 4194, Sarasota, Florida, the zip code 34230-4194. Well, now let's get back to our conversation with Kathy Silverberg, and we also have Andy Howe with us, along with Steve Norris, our usual co-host in the program. If you're looking for Joe Hendricks, Joe is, well, we don't know where Joe is. Joe is on his honeymoon. He had a very nice wedding at the beach last weekend. A lot of us were out there and enjoyed the event. And Joe and his wife, Amy, are somewhere out there honeymooning, and we wish them well. They might even be listening on the internet. You know, you can listen to WSLR on the internet at www.wslr.org and click on the live programming link, and you can listen to us anywhere in the world. Well, Kathy, let's talk about some of your articles specifically, and one that's really a hot topic with me is bullying in the schools. And you wrote an article about bullying in the schools. And I'm going to quote the headline from that article: "Bullying's tragic proportions are beginning to be realized." Would you make a comment on what's in that article and your feelings on that topic, please?
Well, the topic was referred to a young woman who committed suicide following about 6 months, if I remember the story, of what could only be called harassment. Some of it was actually from her schoolmates, and some of it was actually at school, but some of it was done through the internet and all the social media sites that that make all that so easy for people to do. And I think more than anything, it's the meanness and cruelty that that it manifests itself in that such an ugly way, and it's sort of a reflection of sort of the meanness that we see in the world today.
I think that meanness has always been there. I mean, I experienced bullying when I was a kid. Did you, Steve?
Yes, I did.
You're not a big 6'6" guy.
My best defense was running. I was a very good runner.
But I think most kids in school experience this. And back when I went to grammar school and high school, I didn't really go to middle school. It was a situation where big kids or mean kids or rough kids picked on smaller kids for whatever reason. Today, it has reached enormous proportions because the big kids form gangs and pick on smaller kids and frighten kids away from going to school or force them to join gangs. It's a much bigger problem than it was, I think, when I went to school, when Steve went to school. And now we have the cyberbullying on the internet, and we've had some terrible stories about children who have been so tormented by this that they have, as you say, committed suicide, as you pointed out in this one instance, but kids who have done very extreme things to get away from it. And I've seen children that have been lifelong affected by this because they were picked on in school. It changed their personality. Really a horrible thing. What can we do about this, Kathy?
Gosh. It seems to me, I do think that there's always been a lot of this, but I think it's sort of, it is magnified by the ability to exchange information. That, and I think that there needs to be more of an effort to teach civility and for the adult world to model that sort of behavior. If we think about the meanness that goes on in political campaigns, it is pretty amazing what.
It's rampant in all aspects of our society. And I think one of the things you pointed out in your article was trying to get more parental involvement. Is that correct?
Right.
But we have a real problem in society today because we have so many single-parent homes or situations where a parent is trying to be a model for their child or children, and they have to work and they have to try to run a household without a spouse. A very difficult situation to try to provide the role model aspect in order to eliminate this problem. So what else can we do? Steve, do you have any thoughts on this?
I wanted to ask, Andy hasn't said much.
Yeah.
What her thoughts are.
I don't know. I'm not quite prepared for all of this.
Okay. Well, Andy, were you ever picked on in school?
Not very much, no, actually. I think somewhere along the line I learned that the best way to deal with that was to have a buddy. In the same way we have buddies when we swim or when we do a lot of things.
You mean a very big buddy?
No, not, you know, I think you can do a lot as long as you have a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you move through a lot of those things. And I think if kids sort of get that sometimes, that's a really good way of working through bullying situations. Sometimes that's not easy for kids, though.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. To have a friend that walks with you, or like the Rangers would stand back to back and defend themselves against a bunch of people coming at them, that builds self-confidence and also tends to keep other people away. If they're going to pick on one person, very easy to do, but picking on two is a little bit more difficult. And sometimes if the two people together are big enough, they can take that bully and teach the bully a lesson, which I don't think happens too often, but there's safety in numbers, as they say.
Well, I also believe that I'm a big proponent of early childhood education.
Mm-hmm.
And the earlier that we can get children who are, especially those who don't have home situations where they have good role models, the earlier we can get children involved in programs where they can have good role models, where they can learn good ways to handle their feelings. And I think more programs like that go a long way toward catching these feelings. So often I think bullying is an outgrowth of very insecure feelings. And I think that when we can help build our children up, give them the tools they need to face life as early as possible, I think those kinds of things help.
Can the schools do anything to control the cyberbullying which has been going on?
I do know there are some programs some of the schools in this area have tried, and I think conversation about it. The more attention can be focused, on strategies that to prevent that sort of thing, empowering children to stand up to those who would engage in this kind of behavior. I think those help.
We've read about the story from the girl who came from Ireland and moved into the Northeast and was so tortured by these other kids that she ended up committing suicide. And I don't know how you can punish kids, how the schools can punish. And we look to the schools quite often because the kids spend, a third of their daytime, 5 days a week at school, roughly a third. And a lot of people say, well, the school should do this, the school should do that. But how can the schools really provide that kind of influence?
Well, it probably takes more than just schools. It takes the whole community involved. But I do think that programs that can help children to be involved in constructive activities is a help. I also think that whatever we can do as a society to celebrate our differences. Sometimes bullying comes out of a fear of differences, and it's interesting that you were talking about that with the fear issues. But I think that there needs that, you know, the more we can teach our children that, you know, to celebrate those differences, that would be a step in the right direction.
We'd like to take a little break and remind you, you're listening to WSLR LPFM 96.5 in Sarasota, your community station. This is Local Matters, and our phone lines are open. The number is 355-4540. If you have a question you'd like to direct to Kathy about the things we're talking about or anything else which relates to the newspaper business, any of the articles she's written, feel free to call in at 355-4540. Steve, any further thoughts there?
Yeah, well, we were talking about bullying and sort of that as a community problem. And I heard that, I believe it was Martin Luther King saying that poverty is not the problem of a person. It is a problem of society. And I wanted to ask you about your opinions you've written on poverty and also homelessness, and how you see this community and what you see for the future.
I do. Poverty is it's a problem that, gosh, I think we've all become much more aware of that, especially in the difficult economic times that we all have faced in the last 2 or 3 years. But it's always been there. It's just I think we're all more a little more aware of it now. And poverty is a multifaceted issue, but it certainly involves health issues, mental health issues, just a variety of things. But I guess I still go back to that education. It's not going to solve all the problems of the world, but I do think education, as early as we can get it to children, is a way. We have got to give children we've got to give them a reason to believe that there is another way.
How do you feel about the Head Start?
I think those kinds of things, but it's got to go much deeper. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Louisiana, and I visited a school in New Orleans. It's just getting ready to reopen. And what they've done with this school, it will have early childhood education. It will have pre-kindergarten and kindergarten. But it's also a one-stop community center. It has a health facility there. It has offices of governmental social services there. It has adult literacy classes. So it's really addressing the whole family, if you will, because their belief is so much is that these children, they don't want to be different from their families. They want to, you know, so if we can bring the whole family up while you're bringing the child up, that this has some real promise.
And how do we do this in our local communities? I think you're probably a little more familiar with the communities to the south, the Charlotte Harbor, Punta Gorda, that type of thing. And Steve and I are much closer to Sarasota because we live here. But can you see any overall way that we can attack this problem?
Well, I do think there are community organizations that are working really hard. There are that do children's-centered programs. The YMCA has some wonderful programs, mm-hmm. and I know, as I'm not as familiar with the ones in Sarasota proper, but there are a lot of people doing Boys and Girls Clubs, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. There are lots of very well-meaning people out there doing work. I think it's going to take more of that, more community support of that, more government support when that's called for. As I see it, it's a cycle. The poverty is so, there's so much a cycle of poverty, and if we just have got to figure out a way to break that. And I think focusing on children is one of our main ways.
Tying into that, there's the homeless problem, and you had some comments on homelessness in one of your articles recently. Can you throw any light on your feelings about that?
I guess that grew out of something that was going on in Charlotte County at the time when there was an effort to really crack down, if you will, on homeless people who were living, you know, in the woods or trespassing, as they explained it. But this goes back to some of what we were saying about the meanness of the world and the difficulties there are in dealing with people who are different from the way we are, and a fear that there's so much fear that people have of those who are different. I do in the homeless situation. Many times, sometimes it is just a matter of the economy. And we are certainly seeing more of that. But there are also lots of times very deep-seated issues, substance abuse issues and mental health issues and things like that that contribute. And I think there needs to be more effort to address those needs.
Well, speaking of Sarasota, I know that there's been a lot of articles written in the Herald Tribune about the quote-unquote homeless situation. And they failed to separate homeless from vagrants. And there are homeless people that are out. Some people choose to be homeless, and we have to accept that fact. There are people that want to be in the streets. They don't want to be tied to other people. They don't want to be in a home. That's a certain percentage of people that are out there. But we have people in our downtown area, around the Five Points area, and things like that, who are a nuisance, and I don't call them homeless. I call them vagrants. They are problem people because drugs, alcohol are only part of it. I mean, you have people exposing themselves out there, swearing in the street, driving the tourist population away. And, of course, the tourist population is fundamental to our staying alive here in Sarasota. I'm not sure what the best solution for that is. There's a lot of criticism directed at the police for chasing these people, say, away from the library and picking them up and taking them down, and they arrest them and they give them a slap on the hand, or they put them in jail overnight and they get their three square meals, and then they're out on the street again and causing more problems again. It is a vast, vast problem. And I wondered, since you had written that article, if you had any particular thoughts on how we can address this better.
Well, I guess what I mentioned in that article is, I think one thing is definitely there needs to be more resources for those who do have substance abuse issues and mental health issues. And even some of the vagrants, as you call them, and I understand what you're saying, that we shouldn't have to deal, you know, people who are shopping or out for the evening shouldn't be accosted by people. I mean, that I certainly understand. But throwing them in jail doesn't. That might solve the problem for that night, but it's mm-hmm. a very expensive, mm-hmm. one thing, it's a very expensive for government to support that. It would.
And government is us, of course. We
absolutely
end up paying for it out of
absolutely
our own pockets.
Absolutely. And I think, I don't profess to be an expert in this area, but the reading I've done is oftentimes that substance treatment, even forced treatment, has good results with some of these people that have mental health issues that need to be addressed. And I don't think I think our resources for mental health are woefully under.
Well, treatment costs money, and of course we're short on money now, right. So it becomes a much lower priority.
It does. But of course that's one of those short-term, long-term things, because it costs money for the treatment in the short term, but in the long run, to continue to put these people in jail is very expensive as well. So.
Now, you have lived here in Southwest Florida how many years?
5 years.
Okay. You are aware of the fact that some mental hospitals and other facilities were closed down as part of a general state activity here a few years ago. This putting a lot of people with mental illnesses and problems back on the street again. So that has contributed to the overall problem we had. And I know you don't have your statistics in front of you, but you quoted some amazing percentages regarding the people that are out on the street. And you talked about military veterans, for example,
yes,
and people
yes.
like that. Can you quote those statistics back to me so that the audience can partake
of it? I don't have that in front of me,
okay.
But I do know. Well, this part of the country, and Charlotte County in particular, has a tremendous number of veterans.
Mm-hmm.
But even with the number of veterans that's much larger than most places, the percentage of homeless veterans is even out of proportion. So I think what happened, and part of it, you know, part of it is the attractiveness of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
People come to Florida thinking they can find a job, because for so long it was so easy to find a job. They get down here. They also come because the weather's good. They can live outside for
yeah,
a time
right.
if they need to. But they come and then they can't find work. And talk about, I think that becomes a spiral of, then they oftentimes do turn to substance abuse and it just becomes a bigger and bigger problem. And there just they're not the resources in the community to address those problems.
355-4540 is the telephone number if you'd like to call in and join us on the air on Local Matters. Kathy Silverberg is our guest. She's the former publisher of the Sarasota Herald Tribune's Southern Editions. Kathy, delighted you could join us tonight, and we're going to continue talking about some of the writing that you've done for the Herald Tribune. Steve, Andy, do you have anything to add?
All right, so we're thumbing through your writings here. Talk to us about improving the quality of instruction in public schools. Do you have a problem with public school instruction quality?
Well, I think that our schools need to do a better job. And I think that one of the things I mentioned in that article was that the teaching profession that once was held in such high regard by society is not as it once was. And part of that is the women's movement, frankly, because so many that's who used to be our teachers. The vast majority of our educators mm-hmm. were women who many, many other professions were not open to them. And as the movement now, as many other professions have become open to women, education, for a variety of reasons, certainly pay has something to do with it, but it has not. It's fallen in our public esteem, if you will. And I think that's so we're not attracting the best and the brightest to our classrooms. And I want to be very quick to say there are some unbelievably wonderful, dedicated teachers, lots of wonderful, dedicated teachers out there. And I know there are certainly in Sarasota County. I've met some, and in Charlotte County as well. But I do believe that there needs to be, I would like to see a higher level of skills in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes that comes from not having the resources for continuing education. I think that, to stay up with the world today, you can't go to college for 4 years and then teach school for 30 years without any supplemental training.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is not enough resources focused on that. I think that's one of the biggest things is keeping teachers up on their subject matter.
When I was in grammar school, the teachers didn't make much of anything. And yet they were respected. I mean, the students respected them. Along comes the unionizing of teachers, and it seems like a lot of things changed. Teachers' pay improved. It's not tremendous, but it's certainly much better than it was many years ago. Right. But on the other hand, it seems like good education is getting bound up in a lot of rules and regulations. You feel that's true?
I think that is true too. Teachers have to do, and of course, we call on teachers to do so much,
mm-hmm.
And they have to deal with so many issues in the classroom that make it more difficult. But I do think that there are rules and regulations, which you know, and nearly all rules and regulations start out with a good reason. But so often we just continue to pile them on without the review of the big picture, you know. And I think there needs to be.
We've gotten in situations where, and you've read about it yourself, I'm sure, where we have teachers in New York City that are just bad teachers. They don't continue to educate themselves. They run the same syllabus semester after semester. They don't care when they come in the classroom, but they can't be fired. So. Yeah. What does the school district do? They can't fire them, so they isolate them, put them in a corner somewhere, and give them a desk and say, you know, stay out of here. That's certainly not good. And, you know, the pendulum has swung from teachers not being paid much to teachers being paid better. But the unionization has taken us to a point where now the quality of education suffers because you have the great teachers out there and the inspired teachers, and yet you have the dead weight out there that you can't flush out of the system.
I think you're right, and I those good teachers, we need to do more to encourage them and to reward them.
Is it a monetary thing, or are there other things?
I think there are other. Monetary is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a believer that we need to go to, that children need to be in school more too. I believe that. I think that there's issues that, and I'm not an educator, so I don't pretend to know how this would all work. But I think in general, year-round school, especially for younger children, has a lot of benefits.
Steve has some thoughts.
Well, I do have a thought since. Tomorrow on my show, I have somebody who's running for school board, so I thought maybe I would mention that tomorrow's Surreal News. Julia Radenbar is running for school board in Bradenton, and she will be one of my guests tomorrow. So if you want to hear more about local issues and how to improve the schools here locally, be sure and tune in. Another guest we're going to have is Katie Huza, who just got out of jail protesting in West Virginia coal mines and the strip mining there. And she just got out of jail, and she'll be my other guest on the show. Now, Surreal News is on from 9 to 10 Friday mornings. That's tomorrow morning.
Are you talking to her by telephone then, Steve?
She's going to call in, yes. Julie will be in the studio.
Very good. Sounds interesting. What time is that program on the air tomorrow morning?
That's 9 to 10 every Friday morning.
The Surreal News.
We also have on a Tannen Weekly and a Media Matters Minute to round things out on the show as well.
Okay, very good. If you would like to call in, we invite you to. It's 355-4540. That's 355-4540. We're talking with Kathy Silverberg, former publisher of the Sarasota Herald Tribune's Southern Editions. And we're talking about primarily her viewpoints, which have been expressed in some of the articles that she has written recently. And you are listening to WSLR LPFM 96.5 in Sarasota, your community station.
Yes, well done. So one other thing caught my eye here, Kathy, and that is Floridians step up to help. So I always like stories about people helping. And, of course, we're on this radio station, we encourage a lot of people to do volunteering. And I remember a little while back when a group of us got together and we made 100,000 meals to feed the homeless. That was going to last about half the year or so, and we're going to do it again. But we all got together and just made a lot of meals. It was incredible for all of us to get together and do that. So tell us about how Floridians step up to help.
Well, it's interesting that when I was investigating that article, I learned that Florida, and I've written several times about volunteering in Florida. I've been active with the United Way in Charlotte County, and most recently with we're working on issues that particularly affect seniors.
And feel free, if you want to mention those organizations, especially the nonprofits, this is a great time to, you're welcome to mention any of the organizations you work with. We'd love to hear about
them. Well, the United Way in Charlotte County has an arm called Volunteer Way, and it's it is a volunteer matching service where agencies that have needs for volunteers actually post their needs on a website, and then and people interested in doing volunteer work can then go to that the website and see what's offered. And they also have a program for teenagers that they do a regular project once a month, a volunteer effort. But I think that the difficult time, let me step back just a minute. Floridians historically have not volunteered as much as in other places. At least that's what my research found. And I think some of that, it goes back to our community, that we come from so many different places. We come to Florida. We don't have that sense of community, especially not right off, that so many places did. But it's been interesting in the last couple of 3 years, the volunteering in Florida has gone up tremendously. And I think it's because people see the need. And when people see their neighbors suffering, people respond. And
you don't think that that's possibly because some people are out of work, or maybe they have part-time work and they've lost it because of the economy, so they say, I got to do something with myself. Well, I could go down and help out and do, you know, Meals on Wheels or something like that.
Well, you know, I think that there is some of that. But interestingly, the study that I looked at said other places, I think that is happening in Florida, but the study indicated that places where the unemployment was the highest, their volunteering was not up. But in Florida, it was, and I hope that they're doing more of that, because there's so many wonderful benefits for someone who is out of work. It just has not only does it help their self-esteem, does it help the agency or the people they're helping, but it actually gives them job experience. And once in a while, sometimes those volunteer jobs actually turn into a paid job.
And we have volunteering available right here at WSLR. If you call 894-6469, you can volunteer. You can even have your own program. This radio station, as a community center, participates in volunteering at many different levels. We have a VISTA volunteer, part of the National VISTA organization. We have local interns, for example, interns from New College, Bree, who's a mullet on our local news show, The Jumping Mullet. And we also have students who rotate through from the local schools, from the middle schools and high schools, etc., that get school credit for doing community service by participating with this radio station. And you're certainly welcome to call in at 894-6469. That's our office number if you want to participate in that. If you want to get on the air and if you have a question for Kathy, you can call 355-4540, and we are taking questions if you'd like to comment.
Great. I want to get into a couple more of your articles
here.
And one is called Born into Poverty, but with Plenty of Potential to Contribute. Talk about that one for us.
That came about because I read a study that the Urban Institute had done, and it found that about half of the children who are born into poverty will be poor, will live in poor households for at least half their childhood. I mean, to me, that wasn't a startling statistic. But it kind of gave me a springboard to say, as I was referring to a little bit earlier, that cycle of poverty, that so often when children are born into poverty-stricken homes, that's all they know, and that's all they don't have any role models. They don't have any picture of what life could be like otherwise. It becomes almost a comfort zone. As strange as that may seem, but it's what they know, and it the earlier they can begin to learn that there are other ways, and the earlier that I remember years ago I did some work with literacy programs, and especially adult literacy, and one of the things I learned was that the time that an adult has the most desire to learn to read is when their child is learning to read. And so if you can get families when they're, if we can address the whole family early on in a child's life, I think that we have so much better opportunity, so much better chance of breaking that cycle. I think that the Urban Institute study also found some troubling things about, for every year a child lives in poverty, their chances of not having a job, the chances of teen pregnancy, the chances of all those things that make life so difficult, the chances go up the longer they're in poverty.
To me, having watched civilization for a number of years now, seeing the deterioration of home life from a two-parent environment, primarily a two-parent environment, when I was a kid, to an environment now where we have so many broken homes, so many single-parent families, so many situations where the kids don't even know who the parent or parents are. Frightening situations. How do you rebuild the moral fabric of society so that we get away from this and get to a point where we have the role models so kids can step up and out of poverty?
Well, I think if I knew the answer to that, I'd probably not be sitting here. Don't we all wish we could figure out the... And I'm sure there is not one easy answer. But I keep going back to that drumbeat. The more resources that can be devoted to young children and to families with young children, I think that is a place to start.
We talked about volunteerism. And if we have more volunteers, is that the key? I mean, money does not solve everything. I mean, we've proved that many, many times in our lifetimes here, that you, Lyndon Johnson and his Great Society program, throwing money out there did not solve the welfare problems and the poverty problems. And so we know that that is not the answer. But do you think it's getting a mentality in the part of the public that says, I'm going to give part of my time to working with these kids to try to provide a role model, myself being a role model, or helping support a structure that provides role models?
I do think that, and certainly there's a lot of research out there that says one-on-one mentoring is one of the most successful ways to change lives, and I think being open to doing that kind of work we all need to do more of that. I also, we hear wonderful things about programs like City Year, where young people are giving a year of service. There are just lots of Teach for America. There are a lot of programs out there that are doing really good things. And maybe maybe more attention. Maybe that's sometimes it's just more attention focused on the solutions. I think we do, as a people, spend so much time talking about the problems and not nearly as much time talking about that there are things that are working, what's working out there. And to hear more about those would be really exciting, I think.
Maybe people have too much freedom and too much free time. I know in Germany that young people growing up are required to provide either a couple years of community service or serve in the military, either in a military role or in a pacifist role. I mean, just working in hospitals and things like that. And we don't have anything like that in this country. We don't have anything which binds you to the United States and says, you have an obligation here. You are living in a free country. You are so blessed, but you don't have to do anything to pay back. And a lot of people say, well, you can't do that. You can't force people to do that. But on the other hand, maybe that would be a positive thing for dealing with some of the things you're talking about here, for fostering the ideas of giving back, for providing the manpower to help give back, and maybe stimulate a lot of young people who, as you know, a lot of kids come out of high school or even get into college. They don't know what they're going to do. They don't know where they're going with their lives. You give them a couple of years of disciplined activity may help them find direction. I mean, these are things which have come to me over many years of watching what's going on. I don't know what your viewpoints are, but please express them.
I think a program like that of community service would be wonderful. The implementation, probably that's the devil's in the details, but
yes.
But I think that needs further work.
What's your reaction, Steve?
Well, I believe that there are great programs out there, and I think some of the programs that haven't worked have fallen by the wayside. And I'm a strong believer in evidence-based decision-making, both in the private and in the public sector. And I think my opinion is see which are those evidence-based programs that work the best and stick with them. There are those out there on many different levels. And we even spoke about some economic programs that target poverty, economics by the Nobel Prize winner who invented microeconomics to give loans to poor women.
The microloans,
the poorer you were, the more likely your loan was to come to fruition and
yes.
work for the banks.
Hmm.
And the banks themselves, which are really owned by the people, when you take out a loan, you become a owner of the bank. So it's more of a credit union for those of you that may be more knowledgeable than myself. So there are very clever ways of doing very clever things to hit at the basic of problems with poverty and homelessness and things we're talking about in society. Evidence-based, I think, is the
okay.
way, is my response.
Andy, we haven't heard from you in a while. What do you think about all of this?
Oh, ways to deal with poverty. I don't know. I'm constantly trying not to deal with poverty myself. So.
Unfortunately, we have a lot of folks struggling with those issues nowadays, not just in Sarasota, but nationwide and worldwide, too, in many, many cases. Well, Kathy, we've really enjoyed having you on the program today, and I'd like to just have you give us your reaction to being on the air for the first time with us.
Well, it's been a great experience. Actually, early in my journalism career, I spent a year in radio.
Oh, okay.
And and did some of these kinds of programs, and it's a fascinating experience. And I always marvel at all this equipment. I was always behind the microphone. I was never the one that knew how to run all the equipment. So I'm impressed with all that you do here, and it's wonderful, I think, to have a community station like this to have people have access to.
And stay tuned for The Revolution Starts Now with guest host Mark Minder is going to be filling in for Joe Jacko, who is not with us. And just one late other headline I want to read, a little humorous one here from Springfield, Massachusetts in the news. Springfield police charge one-armed man with unarmed robbery. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to another issue of Local Matters, and get us on the internet at wslr.org. It's a podcast if you missed any part of this, Gary.
Would you read that disclaimer, please?
Another disclaimer twice in 1 hour?
Yes.
Okay,
I think
these views are not those of WSLR. It's board members, volunteers, or anyone else, just the guests and co-hosts. Here, take what you like and leave the rest.
Okay.
Thanks, folks. Tune in for The Revolution Starts Now, featuring the first programmer who ever set any program going on this radio station, Mr. Mark Bender.
And thank you, Kathy Silverberg, former publisher of the Sarasota Herald Tribune Southern Editions, for joining us. Joe Hendricks will be back next week, along with Steve, who's always around the station.
Always here, every week.
Next week at 6 o'clock on WSLR LPFM 96.5 in Sarasota.